I've been reading this book called Small Fry. Have you seen it? Lisa Brennan Jobs' memoir of growing up as the daughter of Steven Jobs. This book starts and ends with poignant deathbed scenes. The first is heartbreaking. The latter is more redemptive. And in between, you get 33 years of her growing up as the daughter of one of the most brilliant, famous, wealthy men in America, and a sometimes depressed mother whose artwork could barely support them. Parenthood came easily for neither of her parents. Told through the eyes and remarkable memory of Brennan Jobs, we get a picture of a computer genius who famously denied his parentage, who was remote in every sense of the word, and who was really, really odd, cruel, you might say. Page after page, the author manages her mother and yearns for her father's attention, for a place, she says, in the hierarchy of his affection. Now, since the book was first published in September, her siblings and his widow have said that this was not the man they knew, but it's clear that this is her account of the man that she did know, or that she tried, sometimes desperately, to connect with. The reviews have been good. The New York Times review includes this. About Small Fry, they write, it has the defining aspect of a literary work. In the fallen world of kiss-and-tell celebrity memoirs, this may be the most beautiful, literary, and devastating one ever written. Lisa Brennan Jobs joins us now on WGN. Hi, Lisa. This is John. You're on in Chicago. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
The book just came out in paperback. Congratulations on the first round of success since the fall.
Thank you so much.
By the way, I presume you read that review in the New York Times. What was your reaction to that when you saw that?
I didn't read the review in the New York Times.
Why? Were you nervous?
I'm the worst person to ask about reviews because I had a baby just when the book came out. And the tricky thing about memoir is people are sometimes reviewing the book that they're reviewing the book they read, which isn't always the book you wrote. And so even if it's a great review, it can sometimes be disturbing to have your parents characterized in ways you wouldn't. And so I just thought, I have a baby, I can't go on an emotional roller coaster. And also, I was incredibly sleep deprived.
Yeah.
So I decided to just show up for what I could do and not worry about what people were saying. But then people were saying good things. So that was nice.
Well, I'm probably not the first to tell you this, but it's doing really well. It's been a bestseller. The reviews have been strong.
It is.
But you are alluding to something that has sort of happened, and that is that, if I understand correctly in reading about the book after I read the book, you wanted it to be, I don't know if tender is the right word, but you seem to harbor more affection for your father than maybe I got as a reader.
Well, there is something about writing a memoir. You write it, and it's yours, and then you release it, and then it's theirs.
Yeah.
So whatever you got from it is the truth. However, I do feel that sometimes the depiction of my father, which I felt like was a depiction of a human, got a little twisted. And I think people are surprised sometimes when they pick it up, and instead of finding this sort of outlandish, far-fetched story, they find something that reminds them of their own story. And I do hear that again and again. That's just like mine. I think my only fear is that when people focus on the difficult parts of my father, which were certainly very difficult, and growing up with him was at times extremely difficult, but when they focus on that and not on the more balanced picture, it distorts the perception of the book and makes it seem as if it's about him, and makes it seem as if it's about him only being difficult. And makes it seem less like a human story and more like a strange story. And I think that it's a human story. It's fairly universal. Like if I showed him warts and all, I also showed my mother warts and all. I also showed myself warts and all. And of course, there's no excuse if someone abandons a child, except for the excuse of timing, and people are just, you know, doing their best and they sometimes screw up.
Well, he was 23 when you were born, right?
He was 23. I was an accident. And then both of my parents, they were so young, and they were really trying. And you know, my father, like, he sort of fled the scene to some degree. and said he wasn't my father, although I don't think that's what he believed. I just think he didn't want it to be true. You know, he's so young. And then later made a decision to come back and really tried. And I hadn't really taken that very seriously until I wrote the book, and then I realized, oh, gosh, it's really hard when you're an adult, especially when you're pretty good at things, as he was, to try to do something you're not very good at, and even though it becomes clear you're not very good at it, to keep on trying. And he did do that.
But as he got older and maybe got a little bit better, he never got normal or good at it. And I wondered if, in fact, he wasn't somewhere on the spectrum, if his inability to connect with you as a person or a young girl or sometimes other people spoke to just a psychological condition for him.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, the more we look at people, the more whatever their weaknesses are get thrown into a much larger context of their particular difficulties and humanity. There were times when he was very good at connecting, and I felt very seen, and he was dear and generous and kind and loving, and those times felt so great that I thought, oh my gosh, you can do it. We should be returning to this all the time, but then it would be lost again.
There's whiplash in this book, because you're right. There are times where he valiantly tries to connect with you. You can feel his struggle because it did not come naturally for him. No, and then in the next scene, though, there'll be something that you just think, oh my gosh. He's making out with his wife in front of you, moaning and inviting you to watch. And I thought, that's just not normal, but he was trying to make that a normal
scene. Well, and I think the other piece of the equation is he was working really hard, and in a way that a daughter, a young child, isn't aware of and shouldn't be aware of, but he had a whole other life besides me, right? I mean, I guess it's the prerogative of children to be the center of the world, but there were other things that were pulling at him that I didn't know about and don't know about, and so that forms part of the equation, too. The thing about making out, I mean, that you just mentioned, I often think about that. I thought about writing the book, and I actually called some people and talked with them about it. His ex-girlfriend, with whom he would do something similar, said, he was so uncomfortable around you that he would sort of lunge toward me in order to feel more comfortable, because he didn't know what to say to you. He knew what to say to adults. He was good with them. But this sort of charm and tricks and different techniques that worked on other people didn't work on you. And so he was lost. And she said after a while she had to make sure she wasn't around when I was with him so that he and I could forge our own unique and, you know, albeit somewhat awkward relationship just together. And I found that really interesting, the idea that in the moments when I'd felt so excluded and so peripheral, so unimportant, that someone would just completely pay attention to someone else and kiss them in front of me, those were the moments, in fact, when my presence was animating the scene.
Okay, that's an explanation, but that's a considerate one. You know, I still think that given that discomfort, most adults around their child don't have that reaction. They don't behave that way.
It's very strange. It was very strange, and it was a little bit lonely and confusing as a child. And I think part of the reason I wrote this book is there were moments that were lonely and confusing, and now I'm not alone in trying to interpret them, because I have published them in a book, and now everyone gets to wrestle with them and feel them and think about them and metabolize them, and the burden is lifted.
Yeah, that's, a question I have had in reading this. I thought, was it the catharsis that you wanted, or did you want to expose your father for the man that you and I are describing here, that awkward fella? I mean, what was the purpose of writing the book?
I've always loved to write and been a writer, and I deeply, desperately hoped that I would find another subject to write about before this one, so that I could establish myself first as a writer. But this story just kept on coming up, needing to be written, and I finally decided that maybe I had to get this one out of the way before I wrote other things. And it really has been meaningful to me, because I found a lot of meaning and achieved certain revelations about things that I didn't understand. And, you know, I guess, like, part of the reason that it's a little bit of a more profound interpretation is that, or it's a more profound story, is that I couldn't really do it in a superficial way and achieve meaning for myself. So I figured the only way out was through.
Lisa Brennan Jobs is on the line. Small Fry, out in paperback this week, is her memoir of growing up as the daughter of Steve Jobs and a mother who, by the way, was as there for you as she possibly could be, but she had her own demons as well. Life was difficult for her. And your father's, I think, controlling nature exacerbated that for both of you as well. In looking back at your story and all of the vignettes and anecdotes that us readers grapple with, do any of them jump out at you as like, wow, that really happened? That really happened to me? Is there a scene in there that you almost didn't include, or one that you thought was maybe most, you know, representative of what we're talking about here?
I do like that scene. I do like that story of going to stay at my father's house and being alone with him for the first time. I think it's interesting because I was able to remember it as a child so clearly, and then now to go back and remember it also as an adult and have the double layer of remembering was important. I mean, I've dreamed about having a father my whole life. I've known I have this famous father, but I haven't really known him well. And then we're going to stay at his house for the night on a Wednesday night when my mother is taking a class. And there we are alone, heading through the California hills to his mansion in his Porsche, this young and famous and charismatic father. And it felt so exhilarating. And it also felt, I remember this feeling of, it's not enough. Like, it's almost there, but it's not enough. After all this waiting and missing and longing to have a father, this most perfect father, but to still feel as if the car was kind of silent and the past didn't come rush in and we didn't really even know each other yet. So there was, I thought, like, wow, that's an interesting experience. People don't always have this this experience of getting to know their parents almost in reverse, not knowing when they are young and then getting to know them later.
Plus, you didn't want a Porsche and a mansion. You wanted a relationship with your father. And so you wrote, on the night of my 10th birthday, there was a dinner at a big table at a restaurant called Green's. And at the end, we walked out into the night together. And I walked between my parents, holding their hands. It was ecstasy. My arms were like the hyphen that would be added to my name later, joining the two sides. This is the story you had to write at first, and you write it so well. The prose is just jaw-dropping at times. It's really, really an amazing read, and I want to thank you for writing it and for giving us some of your time today, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
I know we're short of time. You got to go, but please come through Chicago and visit with us in the studio sometime.
Thank you. I'd love to. Thanks.
Are you writing something else, by the way? You working on anything else these days?
Not yet. I decided I'd give myself a year after the double birth of baby and book.
Yeah, you've sired two things there, but do visit with us again. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Lisa Brennan Jobs' book is called Small Fry. She's just got phrases in there, turns of some words that I couldn't help but copy down. Walking along a path in Hawaii, she described the geckos chirping like metal birds. She wrote, the forest was thick with veined waxy leaves, wrapped around other leaves. The fragrance was stronger at night, sweet and cool as if the flowers were exhaling. The air smelled of flowers, decay and salt. That's how you describe a walk in a tropical wood. It's 1:53.